Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Today, from our studios here in Muskogee, Oklahoma, we have Samantha Pavlovsky and her friend, Greg Wright. And they are passing through on their way to Dallas and back to their home in California. They stopped to do a broadcast with us. Welcome to the show, both of you.
How are you, Greg?
Very good. It's fun being here in Oklahoma and seeing what your recording situation is like here.
Yeah, we immediately, of course, the last time we did a show was in Laughlin, Nevada.
That's right. It was a very fun conference that we went to there.
Yeah, it certainly was, and you guys have been to a few conferences since then?
Four. We've been on a two-month trip doing conferences along the way.
Well, we're going to get into some of the conferences and your impressions and some of the things, but Greg, you're holding in your hand here something that is pretty incredible.
This is allegedly a piece from a crashed UFO, and it comes from a rather special source in the field of ufology, a man named Michael Wolff, who is said to have worked for the Special Studies Group of MJ-12. He's no longer alive, but when he was, he gave these pieces to some friends of his, one of whom was our friend, Chuck Guzzi. Chuck, in turn, gave it to us to take around to some of the UFO conferences. And at the X conference in Washington, D.C., just a couple of weeks ago, we met Paula Harris for the first time and handed a piece to her. And she had a very strong emotional reaction to it, not knowing what it was, but then eventually realizing it was a piece just like she had been given by Michael Wolff and had analyzed and found to be 99% silicon, but 1% extraterrestrial, or I should say non-terrestrial material.
And it's a pretty unique piece here, and is that we had a picture on our website of you holding it in the palm of your hand. You showed that to more than just one or two people, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, we in fact showed it to a remote viewer who, without telling her at all where this was allegedly from, she started getting a scenario involving ETs on some other planet. No way to know whether that particular scenario is true or not, but it was interesting that that's what she picked up.
Did she say what the planet was?
No, she had no name for it. She just described the kind of tunnel effect and so I don't even remember the particulars of her description now.
Interesting. I want to talk to both of you about the X conference in a moment, but Nicolette, you're going to actually start speaking at some of these conferences, and your first one's coming up in Denver in November.
Yes, Denver in November makes it really easy to remember.
We're a poet here. We can write a song, right? Like a Denver, November, and remember.
Yes, exactly. This conference is the World UFO and Paranormal Conference. I guess you can find it on the website easily enough. And the people that put it on were so impressed with my channeling, they asked me to be a speaker.
So your subject will be about channeling or what?
About channeling and about using channeling as a way of getting information about ETs and what's really going on in the world.
Well, we're going to talk about a little bit about that here in a moment. First of all, you went to Aztec, I guess. It was your first sojourn out of California on your way east. Is that right?
Yes, Aztec, New Mexico.
And how, Greg, what about Aztec? It's kind of a quaint little place, and that's an interesting little conference.
Yeah, it had a homegrown type of feeling to it because we met at a local school. And there were only a handful of speakers, but we enjoyed ourselves.
And then from there, I saw you guys in Eureka Springs, and that's always a good conference.
That was the first time we'd been there. Eureka Springs is a fantastic area, too, one of the most beautiful parts of the country I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. A lot of people, you know, you talk about Aztec and Telluride, Colorado and everything, and right there in this place in Arkansas is everything that all those places are. And a little more because it's got the Midwest structure to it, too.
Yes, yes. Apparently, there was a crash that was similar to the Roswell incident in Aztec, and that's why that conference got started there. Most of the people are local people that have had direct or indirect knowledge about the Aztec crash.
That's right. In fact, we had Wendell Stevens on with us the other day, and Wendell was talking about, he wrote a book about the Aztec crash, and basically talking about how that goes, and Dennis Balthaser, who's been the little thin guy that was the MC, he's been into that pretty much, and this year they had somebody that has another book out, right, about Aztec. Remember Scott?
Scott Ramsey, who's been a mainstay for the Aztec conference, and yeah, he's just about to come out with his book, which will have a lot of new information about the crash.
Now, the interesting thing, and we'll get into the channeling and all of that here in a little bit, but I want to talk to you this week, our shows. We started yesterday for our UFO Files report talking in great detail about this Dr. Dan C. Burrish controversy. And you were there at the X conference, and really there were so many things going on, it's hard to keep track of what was happening, right?
Yeah, there were usually three speakers at a time, so you had to make a selection as to who you wanted to hear.
Stephen Bassett did a pretty good job first time out, I think, Nicolette.
Yes, he did, and he made an excellent keynote speech as well. It was just awesome.
Yeah, Steve DeCee's a good guy, and, you know, he actually ran for Congress at one time. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yes, apparently he's on some sort of program. What do you call
this? Well, it's a talk show.
Well, American Idol is a very, very popular TV show, and now they're doing something like American Politician.
It's a
reality show.
Reality show. That's what I was trying to find in my mind.
This is news. I didn't know he was doing this.
Yes, he's doing a reality show, and he needs as many votes as he can get. So get on that website of that reality show and vote for Stephen Bassett.
Is that on Fox, or do you know?
I'm not quite sure what channel that's going to be on.
We'll find out about it and try to get more details. We have Steve scheduled for later in the week anyway, so you guys are giving me some inside information here. Well, what about that conference, Greg? Give me an overall picture of what happened there. How was it laid out and everything?
Well, it was like a whole life expo where you have multiple speakers at the same time. Richard Hoagland was the star speaker in that he got, I don't know, five hours or something like that total. And with Tom Van Flandern helping out with his presentation. And so that drew a lot of the people. They had about 600 people is what we heard, which is very good for a first year conference.
Now, Richard, did he talk about Mars or what?
Yeah, one day he talked about Mars, and the previous day, which I missed, he talked about political something or other, which I can't.
Yeah, well, basically that was the overall spin in that conference anyway. They always got back to the political area. That was what it was about.
I think that's what's needed in the ufology field, too, is that we're starting to talk about not if they exist, but what are we going to do about this contact that we're having. And that's what I like about what I'm seeing with Stephen Bassett and what he's doing. And he's taken some suggestions from a lot of people about making it a working program of grassroots movement to get the political world to look at this agenda seriously.
Well, of course, the overall writing subject is a disclosure or not disclosure. And then the subject came up of fake disclosure. And lots of things around that. Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, my concern is that when and if the government decides to do disclosure, they're going to put their own bias or their own spin on it and make it support their military agenda, their agenda to create more weapons and defense systems, etc., because that's what our economy is really based on. And I think that they're going to try and make ET look like the enemy and that we have to stay separate from them and be very careful about who we deal with and treat them like diseased animals when they land here and everything else. And I think that's the inappropriate way to handle this.
I want to say about that one of the people that we especially admire for her dogged research to find the truth is Linda Moulton Howe. Yet at the same time, according to Nicolette's channeling, she has become overly trusting of government sources. So at the X conference, for the first time, she presented information from MJ-12 documents saying that when we had the crash at Roswell, or actually multiple crashes around that period of time in New Mexico, that people got sick and even died from retroviruses that allegedly were brought there by the ETs. And secondly, Linda said that at least on one of the ships, there were human body parts found. Well, consider the impact of that kind of information. ETs are dangerous. They carry diseases. Don't go near them because you may die from them. They may kill you. They may chop you up, take you aboard ship and chop you up. All of this is very scary information about ETs that, according to Nicolette's channeling, is being put out by the government, interspersed in these documents, which are otherwise perhaps real, but have disinformation mixed in to make us scared of ETs.
That's exactly what the Dan Burrish controversy is about. I don't know if you are up to speed on this, but they have a website out there that supposedly is his, which he had nothing to do with. He was an astrophysicist, a biologist, who supposedly was at Area 51 with J-Rod, one of the living ETs, and he was working on biological concerns about it. And basically, that's what the whole gist of the whole thing is. And Larry and I were talking about on yesterday's program the fact that once you run through the terrorists and you no longer have that to build up the military-industrial complex, the evil ETs may be next.
Exactly. I think that that's exactly what is the plan. And we need to make sure that there's a grassroots movement to make sure that there is other information out there about ETs and the other ETs that we're in contact with the government's not talking about, that have provided us spiritual insight, that have provided us technology to help us out with our resources, etc. ETs that have our best interest in mind and do not look at us as simply a source of resources, like our government seems to be looking at everything.
So let's talk a little bit about your book here for a minute. Let's go ahead and give the title again.
Who's Who in UFOs and ETs.
And Who's Who in UFOs and ETs. In fairness to Linda now, there must be not all of them are good guys.
Not all of them are good guys, of course not. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of ETs that are, well, just like us, you know, greedy little individuals that want all the resources.
Speak for yourself there, Nicolette.
Greedy little individuals that want all the resources to themselves and want total control of the resources, and I think that's what our government's trying to obtain. And so, yes, there are ETs out there. As a matter of fact, we think the Billy Meyer case may be a case of that, where these ETs are pretending that they're humans and they're actually lizards, and they're just simply trying to ingratiate themselves so that they can get resources later on down the line.
And a discussion with Bill Hamilton last Saturday night, and that'll be on our website later in the week. And Bill and I were talking, of course, about the Dan C. Burrish thing, since he's the one that started it. He actually knew the fellow on a personal basis, and they became very good friends. And basically, he was saying that many of these ETs look just like us, except maybe their eyes might be a little bigger or whatever.
Yes, many do, and a lot of them that are even humanoid don't even necessarily have the same genetic stream, but they are humanoid in appearance, but they may be marsupial or they may be, you know, cat-like people or something, but they look very human-like. So.
Yeah, Nicolette and Greg, we have on our website an interview in which we discuss this in great detail in Laughlin about the insectoids are the most common, you say.
Yes, I think that they're the most common because they're the most likely to develop out of a planet that doesn't have any disasters, such as asteroids or anything like that.
Well, now we, of course, talking with Greg and Nicolette. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of stories that were told in the presentations at the Eureka Springs conference. One was by Wendell Stevens about very human-looking ETs that had landed in Brazil and were in contact with a couple there, took them aboard ship, and so on. And then there was a second story, entirely independent, told by Timothy Good about ETs who had landed a ship in North Dakota, and a couple of children went out, made repeated visits to this field where the ship was, or valley, I think it was, where the ship was, and they were sampling biological materials. Well, when we channeled about each of these cases through Nicolette's channeling, the channeling said this was actually the same group of beings in each case, North Dakota, Brazil, and that these particular beings, whom we don't even have a name for at this point, will be one of the most important groups that's going to be working with humans in the future.
Wendell, in his book, goes into great detail about the two people that were abducted or had the contact or whatever you want to say. They were Jehovah Witnesses and Jehovah's Witness, and the guy was really dedicated. And Wendell's book is quite hilarious as the ET sits there and listens and listens and listens patiently and says, is everybody on Earth like this?
I hope that certain religious groups as well as government groups do not end up representing the rest of the human race, that's for sure.
Well, so it's a good story, and we've talked to Wendell about it before, and we have a whole show built around that coming up in July, or maybe August, right in that area, because that is an interesting twist. But Timothy Good thinks it's the same people, huh?
Oh, no, he didn't say that at all. That's what I was trying to say, is that he, totally independent of Wendell's report, he told this other report of this other case, seemingly entirely unconnected. It was only when we channeled about each case, again, with no suspicion that they were connected, that the channeling said, hey, these are the same people, the same beings.
I was busy taping Sunday afternoon when you had a channeling session there in Eureka Springs at your hotel room. What actually happened there? Can I ask the channeler? Does she remember, or do you have to tell Greg?
Well, channeling is tends to be, for her and many others, like a dream state. So if we discuss information immediately after she comes out of trance, it's like, you know, writing in your dream journal what you just dreamed about. But if you don't record that dream right away and think about it consciously, it'll quickly fade from memory. Same with channeling information.
So I've talked to several people who were going to go over there. What did you guys deal with? What kind of subjects?
I don't remember.
Okay, I knew that. I'll ask that. It's Greg. In fact, why don't you explain to the audience that hasn't heard our other interview the fact that how this works? And her channeling is a little different in that actually. You guys have considered, and I think you should do it, do a radio program where she can actually pick up and channel with people that she's never met, probably on the phone even.
Well, yes, that's what I had talked about in the first interview, how wonderful it is that with channeling, an entity who is on the spirit plane can tune into the soul of a person without knowing anything about them previously and read the soul's records, so to speak, and tell that person intimate things about their lives, about their purpose here on Earth, and all just within seconds. If you went to a psychologist or a psychiatrist to figure out what your life is about, it could take years of therapy. But these amazing insights can come in seconds, and it would be perfect for radio.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the X Conference for a moment. Did you guys see any government agents, double agents? Can you tell?
Well, there was this one guy that was pointed out to us by a passing a friend, and they said, yeah, this guy's definitely looking kind of government agent-like, and so I just kind of tried to psychically tune in, and I don't know if he was a government agent or somebody that just likes to pretend he thinks he is, you know, so there's a lot of wackos out there.
Yeah, we understand that, and you know, they do show up, come out of the woodwork. What about, Greg, what was your overall impression? Do you feel like the government was trying to infiltrate that conference?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked me, too, because Nicolette and I are both aware of a particular incident that happened that could actually sabotage the conference financially. Somebody spilled a black staining substance all over the carpet in the main hallway where we were having the conference, right outside the main rooms where the speakers were, and in the hallway where the speakers were selling their books. So this caused many thousands of dollars worth of damage that may have to be paid for by the conference. We're not sure yet how that's coming out. But think how simple it was for apparently a government agent to come in, spill something on the carpet, and maybe ruin the profits of the conference.
Did this happen while people were there, or did it happen overnight, or what?
Yeah, we think it happened while people were there because it was evident that the stuff that was spilled was kind of scattered here and there everywhere in that hallway. And it looks like oil and graphite or something like that.
I mean, really nasty stuff, huh?
Yeah, stuff that it looks like it could be very difficult to get out of the carpet. And I think that they probably just walked around with a coffee cup full of it and kind of spilled it here and spilled it there. And the thing is that it's been tracked in by all the traffic that was going over the carpet. So we know that it happened between Saturday and Sunday.
I would call those things dirty tricks. There were dirty tricks going on.
Oh, yes, I think so. And with the Exit Politics conference particularly, and this is where it happened, I think that there could be a good reason for the government, as far as they're concerned, to try and stop this from reaching a political level. There were people there from politics.
Now, we've talked to Dr. Michael Sala before, in fact, just before the conference started. He was one of the speakers in the exopolitics area. It's a wide, varied event, and this disinformation cycle, or this false disclosure, I guess, for lack of a better term, I had never really thought too much about that, but that seems a pretty logical way for the government to follow things.
Yeah, that's what we're most concerned about. I mean, so many people in ufology are focused on proving that UFOs exist, that ETs are here. But we're much more concerned about what happens after that proof is offered, after there is disclosure. Then, who's going to make the decision about which ETs we have relationships with and which ones we consider enemies?
And how we're going to have those relationships. I mean, if a UFO decides to land on the White House lawn and starts to say hi, are we going to immediately, involve NAFTA and military and sequester them away in a quarantine and treat them like, a dog that has rabies? Or are we going to, just sit down and talk with them and treat them like a human being? I think that these ETs, with all their technology, if they can fly from star to star, I think they know whether or not they have a disease that's communicable or not.
You get an interesting point there, and it makes sense to me. But the thing that I'm really trying to get a feel for it is, do you think we're any closer to disclosure, or do you think, this is the major reason Bill Hamilton is quitting. It's not because of the fact that he couldn't take the heat over this Dan Burrish thing. He's had many other people questioning him over things over the years. Basically, it's because, as he's told me on an interview the other day, that he's been doing this for 51 years, and he started when he was very young, 12, 13 years old, being very interested in this, and he says, we really don't know much more than we did 51 years ago. We don't know who they are, where they're coming from, what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. So, there's movements around the country and around the world for disclosure, like in Brazil right now. There's a big movement for disclosure. It seems to be working. There seems to be a lot of activity in South America anyway. So I'd like to get both of your opinions about that. Do you think disclosure is any closer, or do you think it's going to come? And Greg, after you talk, I'm going to see if Nicolette not only gives her opinion, but maybe she's had some information from channeling areas as well.
Okay, well, I was going to say that according to her channeling, disclosure is still quite a ways away. But also,
that's fine.
I'll let her elaborate on that. But I want to share something that might seem far out to some of your listeners, but if you believe in the possibility of alternative timelines and that we can actually tune into what has happened in an alternative timeline, that's what we did once with her channeling. We asked the question, are there any alternative timelines where President Kennedy was not assassinated, where he survived the assassination attempt?
It's an interesting concept. You could write a very good novel about that.
See, one of the things that we believe about President Kennedy is he not only knew about the UFO situation, he wanted to disclose it to the public. And what we were told about this alternative timeline was he did survive the assassination attempt. He did disclose the UFO situation to the public. But in our current time of the year 2004, in that timeline, we were at war with the Greys. Now, if you think about that, I think what happened was we weren't ready for disclosure. We still had a lot of fear about ETs. We still had this military type of attitude. We have to defend ourselves. And if we suspect any threat at all, we're going to fire on them before they get to fire on us. And hopefully, in our timeline, by the time we have disclosure, we're going to be wiser than that. We're going to have a lot more information about ETs, including from people other than in government, and we'll behave more rationally.
Yes, I'm definitely hoping for that. My channeling has said that basically the ETs, the Federation, has decided that they're not going to have contact with us in an open, land on the White House lawn kind of contact until we put our armaments away, until we get rid of political agendas and black government agendas that would be more militaristic. We're just not ready for contact if we're going to be toting guns into space, and that's what we're doing. That's what Star Wars Project is all about. And Star Wars is definitely out there, whatever they, you know, tell people on the news. I know better. I know it's out there because my stepfather worked in the program.
And, of course, the Bush administration just recently declared that near space, the area from the moon to the United States, is United States territory, which is kind of contrary to international law. I want to ask you about this a little bit more about disclosure. And, you know, France had an official paper, I don't know if you remember that year, in which they pretty much said that they were around, and nothing ever came of it. So that kind of answers the question, well, why do other governments not do this? It almost has to be, I guess you have to trot some people out with some proof.
Well, not only that, but the United States has made it a official business of theirs to take any UFO information gathered up by any other government in the world and sequester it away.
Well, we've done many interviews of people in Brazil, and that happens all the time down there. I don't know how the United States gets involved, but I've understood it's through the, believe it or not, the aid programs. There is a little attachment in the paragraph there. Well, we have a right to come in and protect our interests.
As well as any loans from the World Bank.
And so that's one of the things that people have to be aware of. You went to several conferences, and we'll get back to the X conference here in a minute, but let's talk about the one in Georgia. I've just kind of brushed over that. What happened there?
I've been to so many conferences, I don't remember one from the other. You'll have to ask Greg. He's good at that.
Greg can remember where he was, huh?
Well, yeah, that was the Life Arts Expo in Atlanta. And we especially went there to see David Icke, because just like Richard Hoagland was the featured speaker at the X conference, David Icke was the featured speaker in Atlanta. Now, we have an opinion about David Icke's work. Again, through the channeling is how we were clued into this, is that his idea of a monolithic reptilian conspiracy to run the world is a vastly oversimplified idea, and in fact completely wrong in some respects. And we actually went to this conference with the hope of talking to him about some of his ideas. The idea that everything goes back to the Anunnaki, when they ruled the world, the gods of the Old Testament and Sumeria. Well, yeah, they did rule the world at that time, but according to Nicolette's channeling, they're gone now. The reptilians that are harassing people where that does happen today are completely different reptilians from the Anunnaki, and yet David Icke is equating the two. And that's a complete mistake, in our opinion. And secondly, the New World Order conspiracy, in our opinion, again, through the channeling, is not monolithic. There are 13 separate power elite families that often completely disagree with each other on policy. For example, some of them want ETs to come here. They want the Anunnaki to return and to rule the world with them as assistants. Other power elite families want to keep all ETs out. They look at them all as competitors for power. So Bakhtar said that David Icke called him a lazy researcher, and that's very ironic because he has been so prolific with all of the, in fact, excellent information in all of his books, and yet he hasn't taken the care to distinguish different groups of reptilians or different families of power elite, and that's what we're concerned about.
So the conference in Georgia, you thought was pretty interesting from many aspects besides getting into hear David. Where was that held at?
That was at the Atlanta Marriott Hotel, and we remember that well because we're traveling with a ferret, and the hotel wanted us to deposit $300 against any possible damage the ferret would do to the hotel room. However, we worked things out with them. It turned out very well.
Made the ferret cough up the money, huh?
That would be nice if you could do that.
let's talk a little bit about the overall aspect of things. You guys have a certain direction you're going, and one of the things that you decided to do, you've been going to these conferences for a while, I take it. I mean, you've been to Laughlin for a couple of years at least, or maybe more.
I've gone for about 10 years, never missed one since then.
How about you, Nicolette?
At least five.
So, but you've decided to get really involved in this. I'm going to flesh out where you're going and for people to watch for you when you're ready to appear. You've actually been able to make inroads now, and you're going to make this this first presentation of your own in November up in Denver. Remember, I had to throw it. She's got me going. I'm sorry.
It's a good way to remember because they rhyme.
Yeah.
But, that'll be my first and hopefully not my last. I plan on definitely getting onto the speaker circuit. I plan on doing my channelings across the country as well as the world. I plan on doing two-way conversations through craft circles, both in America and in the England area. And also wanting to reach out to the children of the world because they are the next generation. They're going to be the leaders of the future. So I want to make sure that they understand what's going on as well.
You know, the subject of crop circles has come up in our discussions off mic a couple of times. I take it both of you are kind of interested in crop circles.
Well, it's interesting, too, because we actually had an interesting coincidence with the crop. Date of the X-Conference, the Exopolitics.
And lots of things seem to be coming around the exopolitical scene, and like you say, the thing with the carpet, that's obviously had to be malicious, had to be, right out of some cheap novel of conspiracies, but sometimes that's the way it works. Both of you, do you have an opinion about the, we talked about bad ETs, good ETs, and the government wants to pay attention to the bad ETs because there's more money in that. What about the government? Is there any good forces there, or do you think it's kind of an interesting idea to me that they have been able to keep anything secret for this long? It really bothers me, but the government evidently has been able to keep a lot of things on a need-to-know basis. That seems to work pretty well. What do you think about the government?
It is a mixed situation, definitely. There are a lot of people in government behind the scenes who want disclosure, and in one way or another who are working to support that. Also, for example, let's take the case of Leah Haley, one of the well-known abductees, both of extraterrestrials and of the military. At one point, there was a person who she realized was following her and confronted this person, if I'm remembering the story correctly, only to find out that he was a part of government that was working to protect her, not to harm her or not to drug her and forcefully extract information from her. So that's just one example. There are people behind the scenes, and maybe they aren't even able to admit what they're doing to fellow government people. but who are really on our side, the side of the people and disclosure and openness and transparency. And they're using their positions to help achieve that.
You know, we talked opening up this conversation about David Burrish, and you hear both sides of the story on the on this doctor and the which Bill Hamilton thinks, and I'm inclined to agree with him, is disinformation that he's working on some alien virus. You know, that's got to be careful, this guy, because the government's going to do you in, and I'm not quite sure that's happening.
Well, my channeling does confirm that the government has made retroviruses out of alien DNA, but we made it. It wasn't something that was already present in the aliens and was dangerous to us in the first place, according to my channeling.
So were they using this to develop new biological weapons or what?
I'm sure that's what they're going for, yeah.
Not trying to cure cancer.
Probably not. As a matter of fact, there's cures for cancer out there in other countries, and our government's not doing anything about it.
We always get back to money when we talk about these things. As far as your channeling and what your sources say, who are you channeling with, basically?
Well, my main source is an entity named Bakhtar, who is a six-dimensional entity, is six planets combined into one mind. And that's my main one, but I've channeled 46 different entities to date.
What does your channeling sources tell you about disclosure that's far away, or?
The Federation says that we're not going to be able to have an open disclosure from the ET side, that where they're making contact with us openly, until we get rid of our weapons and our warlike mentality. Until we become a peaceful one world.
Unfortunately, that doesn't appear to be like next week.
Unfortunately, not next week, yeah.
Yeah, I want to add to that several months ago, her channeling said that there were seven major timelines, any one of which, of course, we may choose to follow. And six of those involved what they're calling World War III, which is this Middle East situation, Afghanistan, Iraq, and possible escalation into other countries. And in those six timelines where we had some degree or other of this World War III scenario, disclosure does not happen until that warfare is ended. So we're not saying all warfare on the planet needs to end, but apparently this major focus of conflict needs to end.
You're saying there's one out of seven good chances.
Yeah, one out of seven is that we de-escalate the conflict, that people are therefore less absorbed in negative antagonistic feelings toward each other and are therefore open enough to start receiving some open ET contact and do it in a constructive manner.
Now, you just came through Oklahoma. They're here in our studio here in Oklahoma, in Muskogee, but you came through Missouri. You had some pretty interesting discussions there, I think, with people. One of the things about that I think it, I know you saw Merrimack Cave, didn't you?
Oh, yes, we did see the cave. The cave was good.
And the reason I get around to that, there's a lot of subterranean base stories and lots of things like that going on, and I was telling you yesterday, up in Carthage, Missouri, very close to where you were, there's supposedly a subterranean base, and we had just a harrowing story about a couple of reptilians being about 4 miles inside, that these guys went in their ATVs and all-terrain vehicles and took a shot at them or two with some kind of weapon. So, I mean, this just doesn't happen out in the desert. It doesn't happen in Area 51. It's happening everywhere.
Oh, yes. I believe that there are a lot of subterranean bases, not only just ET, but ET military collaborative bases as well as just military bases.
You're talking about Aztec up very close to there. There's a big subterranean base story that maybe you guys have heard about or not, where the government forces and the ETs actually get in a fight about three or four floors down. You heard about that at Dulce?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I saw some papers that were written by a woman that apparently had been taken down to Dulce and was being tested scientifically on, and she had saw the lower levels of it. And those papers were quite hair-raising as to what happened during that battle. Apparently, there was a bit of a misunderstanding, and military soldiers started firing on the EBEs, and then they started firing back with their telepathic mind abilities.
And they evidently could hit their chest or something. Something would fire out of it.
Well, no, no, it was more of a just a telepathic mind blast kind of thing. The person would just, you know, suffer a major hemorrhage and die on the spot.
And has anybody ever been able to, talking about timelines, anybody ever been able to pin down when that actually happened, if it did?
My channeling confirms that Dulcie did happen, so I think it has.
I wonder what, how long ago was that, I wonder. I wonder, anybody have an idea, 20 years ago? Or?
I think it was in the 1970s, late 1970s, if I'm remembering correctly, or sometime 1970s. I want to also recommend a couple of authors, Commander X and Branton, both of whom got very favorable reviews from Bakhtar in our channeling. On the other hand, somebody who didn't get such a favorable review writing about underground bases was Richard Sauder, who denies that Dulcie even exists as an underground base. And we find that highly suspect.
So he didn't get a very good review, huh?
No, he didn't. Apparently, he's pretty much putting a spin on the underground bases that's kind of leaning towards, well, you know, our government has got all these secret bases, but then later on when that is divulged to the public, then he's going to say, well, thank goodness they did, because now they are going to be able to help us against the ETs. I think that'll be the spin later.
My only experience with Richard Sauder is over the MIA issue and other political issues that have nothing to do with that, and it seems that he does put out a certain government line. That's my opinion.
Oh, yes, I definitely feel that way. I've seen him speak, and there's definitely a government line kind of tone to his information.
Well, okay, you've gone to these four conferences that we know of this year. They're all within recent memory. You have the UFO Congress in Laughlin. You have the X Conference in Washington, D.C. You had the one in Atlanta. You had the one in Eureka Springs. So actually you had five, because you had Aztec as well. The UFO Congress is still a big deal.
Yes, I think it's very, very important that all of these people are reaching out, but I really think that the conferences need to move on to the next level, and that is talk about what are we going to do with this contact, and how are we going to keep this contact from being biased by our government.
I'd like to add something about the UFO Congress. One of the people on the board of directors there who often speaks there is Donald Ware. And he spoke at Eureka Springs, and we missed his talk but heard about it afterwards, that he has been invited into a high elite group of people who are setting policy for the government in connection with ETs. And Nicolette's channeling says that this is a very important development. Bob Brown, the director of the UFO Congress, is very excited that his friend Donald Ware has been invited to participate in this. And, of course, they have high hopes that in representing, as Donald will, the UFO Congress and the UFO community in general, that maybe we will have an important input into government policy at this level. However, Nicolette's channeling says it can go either to our great benefit or our great deficit, depending on exactly how this turns out. So I just wanted to draw attention to this development and say it's important that we, the people on the grassroots level, have input into these meetings that are going to go on with Donald Ware representing at least supposedly the UFO community.
Donald Ware has the positive aspect of thinking that ETs are positive, and he doesn't have any ideas about the ETs being negative, which is the negative part of it, because you have to be able to say, yes, there's negative, yes, there are positive. If you go onto either side of that bias, then you're not showing the situation fairly, and that has to be shown. His other problem is that he is biased to believe that the government is always out to help us, and he totally refuses the idea that there's this black government that's out to, you know, hold this information back and use this as a way of doing an interplanetary war.
I spent an hour with Donald Weir, maybe a little over, at Eureka Springs talking about this, and I've talked to him off and on for years, and he's a, what can we say, he's a retired lieutenant colonel, and he still buys the official line in many ways. But the thing that I have noticed about Colonel Weir is the fact that he has become from more what I call a nuts and bolts guy to the goody, good feeling, feel-good spirituality of it all.
Yeah, if you get a little too fluffy foo-foo with this, then what happens is you lose sight of the reality of this, because you have to look at both aspects, the spiritual aspect, which is very important, because that's one of the reasons why these good ETs want to have contact with us, is because they want to enlighten us spiritually, and I think that's very important. But you also have to keep in perspective the whole picture of everything, because if you go too positive or if you go too negative, then you're going to miss the whole point. And that our government's going too negative. They're seeing things as a threat. They're seeing abductees as a spy. And if you go too positive, such as Donald Weir, then you end up trusting people that you shouldn't be trusting.
And, of course, this is coming from a lady who we just started a conversation with in the show earlier, and you were talking about bad ETs, and you weren't talking about the good ones, basically.
There are good ETs out there, and they really want to help us, and they cannot help us because of the Prime Directive. We have to be able to ask for it, and the only people that are in the right set of mind to be able to ask for that help is the grassroots movement, is the people that are willing to put aside their biases. The government's not going to ask for help because they don't want help. They want control. And if we are in fear, we can't ask for it.
Come back to the X conference. How about that? Did you meet any people from the press, any government people there? Were we making any inroads at all?
There was a woman that we met who is an aide to a congressman from Texas, although she emphasized to us that she was not officially representing him, that she was there on her own, but she says that he is interested and open on this subject. And she was bemoaning the fact that more people are not contacting their congressional representatives, their congress people and senators, and saying, we want to know what the truth is about the UFO subject. So I wanted to put that word in on her behalf for something that she feels is important and she should know. She says these people will pay attention if only we let them know what our wishes are.
And the disclosure aspect of this, you're absolutely right. Nothing's going to happen if Congress and elected officials don't feel a groundswell. And it seems like in the UFO community it's there, but in the general population I have my doubts.
Well, the problem with the congressional government that has been taken out of the dark operations loop, they don't know what's going on. They want to know what's going on, but they're not going to put their necks out on the chopping block if they don't get a groundswell, if they don't get the people calling out and saying, okay, stop the black project.
Well, ET contact has interesting effects on people, and our understanding is that they're of a different vibration, and when you're in contact with that other world vibration, you don't behave usually in your normal, let's call it rational, conscious thinking manner. So you may lose all interest in photographing them, or you may even, as you just said, go back in the house and forget all about it. But maybe there was an important communication that was taking place with you personally from that craft, and maybe it's going to take a while to digest that, and you need to do that in quiet.
And another thing, I think sometimes they have a contact or an abduction, and you just don't remember it.
Yeah, not only do the ETs make it so that you can't remember it, because they know how shocking this whole thing is, but also because you have to be in a state of mind where you're prepared to deal with this at a conscious level. And so if the ETs don't make you forget, you make yourself forget. A lot of people go out there and see the UFO and say, I can't deal with this, walk back in the house and shut it all down themselves. The ETs don't have to shut them down because they shut them down themselves. I had a conversation with a woman one time that had a child, And I was pointing out the chemtrails in the sky, and I explained to her where they were coming from, what they were doing with them, what they were made out of, what health problems they cause, and all that. And I said, now that you know this information, what are you going to do with it? And she says, I just can't deal with this. I have to just kind of go back to my job and raise my kid. That's the problem. There is a decision to not deal with this because it's too complicated, it's too difficult, it's too emotional. You would have to get mad. You would have to go and do something about some of these things that are happening in our government. And people just aren't willing to take that initiative. They're not willing to go into that emotional state.
In our few minutes left, and Nicolette, we're definitely going to see you in Roswell, and we'll get into a channeling aspect, because our listeners really are probably a little vague on that. So I'm looking forward to that.
That would be great.
But we still got a few minutes left, and Greg and Nicolette, before we go, I'm kind of getting an overview of what I'm getting at here is basically what you thought from going to, well, like the UFO Congress. You've been going there for a while. But now, all of a sudden, you're almost on information overload because you've been at five conferences within 2 or 3 months. Anything changing? You have any doubts, or are you changing your views? I'll let both of you talk about it as you want.
I don't think it's changed our view so much as it's motivated us and crystallized for us what we feel our mission is. And one of the things we did is that we want to help a grassroots movement get going from contactees to tell the public what they have learned about ETs so that we can have information from the people, not just from the government. And we have plans to travel around the country talking about our experiences, our contacts, and our knowledge of contacts, but also encouraging others to come out and speak about their contacts and helping them, in fact, to remember that they've had contacts, and through Nicolette's channeling, help them remember what those contacts were about, who did the contacts, and what the purpose was.
You know, that's one of the things I enjoy about going to the UFO conference, besides it makes the radio show a little different. But the fact is that, and this coming year, we're going to have to do some regular formal programs inside a lounge where people call in, it's a live show, and et cetera, et cetera. We've been fighting it for a while, even though that's a lot of fun to do those shows, too. And the reason I've been fighting is because if you're just walking around with a little cassette recorder and your microphone, you'd be amazed who will come up to you and tell you about experiences that they haven't told anybody yet.
Well, we right after the Eureka Springs conference, we were traveling through a tiny town. I don't know if I can even remember the name of it. We stayed overnight there at a motel. It was Route 7 going south back toward Little Rock. And we went to a antique store, and we were finding some fun antiques there, but we didn't realize why we were really there until we started talking to the owner of the store, and it turned out she had had a close encounter. And that close encounter, it was soon apparent to us, was more than just a sighting. It was a contact, and that our purpose in being there was to remind her of that contact and encourage her to go to the next Eureka Springs conference, because she'd been thinking about going, but she just hadn't taken the step. And that type of thing happens to us over and over again as we travel around the country, meeting these people who, you know, who knows where you're going to find them, but they've had experiences, and they're needing somebody to share that experience with.
I think they come in three categories of people who go to these conferences: the true believers, the true doubters, and the people who just feel compelled to be there.
I think the people that are compelled to be there, including a lot of the researchers, unbeknownst to them, their own knowledge, are probably contactees trying to figure out what is going on, because it's laying there in the subconscious mind because they've, you know, for some reason forgotten about it. And a lot of these people are going there because they have an interest and they want to know something, but they don't necessarily want to remember their own experiences quite yet. And others are there because they do remember their experience, and they're trying to figure out if anybody else has had an experience similar to theirs. We need to get this subject out of the ridicule, out of the strange, and into the normal, so that it can be talked about at a dinner table without any ridicule from anyone. We need to get this subject out on local news and national news so that it is a normal subject. That's the only way we're going to get to a level of acceptance, and that's why we want to go talk to high schools and colleges and people that are in small towns, because these are the people that are not getting reached.
Well, Nicolette, how about your perspective in the last two or three months? Has it broadened, or you deepened, or changed?
Definitely the motivation factor, because the more and more I go to these conferences, the more frustrated I become that we're not taking the next step.
Our time is almost here at the end. I appreciate both of you making the effort to come to Muskogee. And, of course, you went over to OK first, because that's on my card. That's a mailing address, and that's literally leaving an entering sign on the same post.
Yes, that town is very small. You blink, you miss it. I think there's just a gas station and another building, and then it's gone.
Yeah, the post office, and that's it. But we're in Muskogee, actually, which is just south of Tulsa. And you've seen a lot of country, Greg.
Oh, yeah, we've loved traveling around in the springtime, all in the whole eastern part of the country. All the dogwoods and the redbuds have just been beautiful. And then when we were in Washington, D.C., the cherries that are planted through much of the city, with the cherry blossoms. So we've just loved it, and we've done some cave exploring, as you alluded to earlier. And
what's next? You're headed toward Texas.
Well, we're going to stop in Dallas to, in fact, visit a woman that we met for the first time at the Atlanta conference named Celeste Levesque. Now, Jim Mars wrote a book about her memories of a past life, very important political past life. And this is a type of book Jim Mars would not normally write, and not many people know about this book. It's called Sisterhood of the Rose. But this is a fascinating woman, and we're going to spend some more time with her.
Well, Nicolette, you and Greg, when you're down there, if you get a chance to see Jim Mars, tell him hello.
Yes, we'll definitely say hello for you.
Okay, now, and then you're going back to California for a little while, but you're going to be back in Roswell.
Yes, we're going to be in Roswell. We're going to do the Denver trip, and, of course, I've got my Burning Man trip that I got to do as well.
Well, we want to find out more about that on the next show, I guess, because we're about out of time here. Any closing thoughts, Greg?
Just that we're learning to have a lot of fun with this at the same time that this is a very serious subject, and of course with the government cover-up and a lot of negative things that go on, you can get very depressed about the whole situation. But it's exciting because there's so much that's going to be new and exciting in ET contact for our whole world, in fact, and so we're excited about that and sharing the message about it.
Nicolette, any predictions?
Well, my predictions are that the government may try to fake a ET war, and that they're actually going to be our own ships that we've been building in our underground bases, and then they're going to claim that we're being attacked by ETs. I think that's going to be the next step after terrorism.
You really, really think that could happen?
Yes, and I think the only way that can be prevented is if all of us know better, and when they start announcing it, we say, oh, come on.
Well, with that thought, we're going to wrap up the show. Now, the book, let's plug it one more time. We do have the address finally where you can order. It's $12, and that includes the shipping.
Yeah, it's not very expensive, but it has a lot of very fascinating information in it.
Well, I was thinking in terms of $12 as being a bargain, not that necessarily meant it was a cheap book.
No, well, it's a short book. It's about 65 pages. We've just added an update for those that have the old edition. We now have a third edition with a five-page update that has a lot of important new stories in it. Things that
any new species?
A few new species, but we're going to elaborate on more species as well as elaborate on the profiles that we have in there. All of those profiles are actually shortened versions of the complete channeling, and so what we're going to do is actually write a full book form where the profiles are in full, and then in context to the subject matter in which those profiles came in.
Well, I look forward to you doing that, and I find it very interesting. We never have really put a complete number of possible different types of ETs, right?
There's just so many of them, and there's a lot of ET groups that are interested in us because humanity really is the hope for the universe, because humanity is one of the only species that is capable of communication with different ET groups that can't otherwise communicate with each other. We're their middle ground. We're their communicators. We're the ones that can have one race that can't talk to another race have a conversation through us, because we have that way of being able to talk to both races at their own levels and understand where they're coming from, and therefore be able to get them to understand each other's perspectives.
Hey, thanks very much, Greg.
Okay, thank you. We've enjoyed talking with you very much.
You too, Nicola.
Yes, we enjoy your show, and we enjoy talking.
Okay, this is Jerry Pippin, and our time is up. From Muskogee, Oklahoma, this has been the UFO Fund.